for his face. He didn't know us, didn't know my mama or me. "You can tell us," he said in his stranger's voice. I held on to mama and wouldn't say anything at all. The doctor slapped the bed beside me hard, then turned and slammed the door open with his fists. I looked at the nurse. Mrs. Meyer was watching me carefully, her hand over her mouth, her eyes old and wise. "I'm sorry," she said to Mama finally, dropping her hand. "He's young, and he's not been here long." We waited, Mama holding me, Mrs. Meyer taking long, slow breaths and glancing back at the door. A black woman with a clipboard full of papers came in and passed them over. "You'll need to sign this," Mrs. Meyer told Mama. She didn't look at me again. I knew exactly what she thought, but I didn't know about Mama. Her face was strange and hard. Her hand where it held me was still cold, but now it was shaking too. For the few moments they left us alone, she looked into my face like it was a map of hell. "Bone," she whispered. I waited. "Sweetheart." Someone walked past in the hall. I put my head over against Mama's breast, listening to her heart, not wanting to hear anything else.
"Baby. Mama," I begged. "Mama, take me home."
"We're gonna go to Aunt Alma's house," she told me while lifting me into the back seat. The look she gave Daddy Glenn when he tried to help her seemed to freeze his heart. His hands stretched before him. He kept reaching out but not touching her. In the front seat, Reese sat with her thumb in her mouth, her face blank and still. Propped up in the back with pillows, I leaned my cheek against the plastic seat cover and tried not to move too much. My shoulder felt hot and enormous, like a balloon full of pain waiting to blow through me. Daddy Glenn followed Mama around the front of the car, plucking at her shoulders hesitantly, but she kept shaking him off. "Don't!" she shouted once. The car shook when she slammed the door, and I gritted my teeth. Daddy Glenn leaned in the window, pleading, tears showing on his face in the lights of the emergency room entrance.
"Annie, oh, Annie, just talk to me. Don't do this. Annie, please, Annie!"
Mama started the car off slowly, letting him hang on to the side until she pulled out into the street. I didn't see the look she gave him, but I heard his cry, hoarse and meaningless, as she gunned the engine, her foot holding down on the brake, the Pontiac jerking but holding. He let go of the door but didn't step back. His face was still close, and then it was gone. Mama's chin was sharp, shining now against other car lights, now against the lights from the dash. I watched the tears on her face when she looked back at me. I closed my eyes, opened them. Everything seemed spongy and strange. But I couldn't care anymore. The cool air rushing in the window was damp and sweet. If there really was a god, or even magic, that air would blow through me and out again. It would go back down that road to the hospital, sweep up the dirt, and throw it in Daddy Glenn's eyes. It would make him see who he was, what he had done. That doctor would come out on his way home, see him there, and know who he was. The wind would tell him, the moon, or maybe even God. That doctor would know, and he would start his car knowing. He would slam that car into gear and roar across that lot. The grill would stop just inches from Daddy Glenn's terrified face. "You son of a bitch!" that doctor would scream. "You ever touch that child again and I'll grind you into meat and blood!" Daddy Glenn would weep tears of blood. Jesus, maybe, would come into his heart. He'd follow us out to Alma's and get on his knees before the whole family.
"I have sinned,"
he'd say, and hold his hands out to me, beg my forgiveness and cry my name. Mama would say no. My aunts would say no. My uncles, Reese, the minister, everyone in the world would stand up and say no. But I would pull myself up from my sick bed. I would look right into his eyes, into the lamps of his soul. "Yes," I would say. "Yes, I forgive you." Then probably I would die. I almost laughed. My shoulders shook. The pain was hot and took the story away so fast I made a little sound. I swallowed hard, determined not to cry. Mama reached over for me. Her face looked old, very old and tired. It made my heart hurt to see her look that way. I couldn't hurt her. I couldn't.
I'm sorry, I whispered.
Don't, honey, don't. You didn't do anything wrong. Her lips were swollen where she had bitten them, and I felt my own lips swollen and cracked against my teeth.
I love you.
My voice was so soft I didn't think she heard me. But hers came back to me, quick and low. I love you too. Chapter 9. 2 weeks later, we were back home with Daddy Glenn. Nothing had changed. Everything had changed. Daddy Glenn had said he was sorry, begged, wept, and swore never to hurt me again. I had stood silent, stubborn, and numb. He had gotten down on his knees in front of Alma, Wade, their kids, and Mama, pulled Reese and me into his embrace, and vowed that he couldn't live without our love. Mama had knelt on the floor with him and made him swear an oath never to raise his hand to me again. I had looked into his wet features and had known, without question, what was going to happen. Mama would forgive him, though she would watch him close and make him earn her trust again. He would be good. He would be careful. But after a while, Daddy Glenn would begin to talk about the accident a little differently. He would remember things that had happened around that time. Things I had said, looks I had given him. One day, maybe months from now, there'd be something I'd done that would make it all seem justified. Then Daddy Glenn would take me into the bathroom again, crying that it hurt him more than it could ever hurt me. But his face would tell the truth, his hands on my body. He would show me just how much he hurt when Mama left him in that parking lot. And then when he beat me, we would both know why. But Mama wouldn't know. More terrified of hurting her than of anything that might happen to me, I would work as hard as he did to make sure she never knew. I set my teeth and tried to ignore everything but what was right in front of me. I talked to no one and kept my face buried in books. At night, I lay in bed with my clasped hands pushing up against the tender place between my legs, listening to the radio and trying not to think. My shoulder had healed quickly under Mama's patient, watchful care, but I felt as if something inside me would never be all right. I woke up so angry my throat hurt. My teeth felt ground down to the nerves. I would go look in the mirror, expecting to see blood in my mouth, but there was nothing, only my teeth small, white, and sharp. Mama kept me close to her. She even let me get up at dawn to sit with her during her most private moments. The hour when she sipped coffee and watched the sun rise. "Never have been able to sleep past sunrise," she told me. "No matter how little sleep I've had, I just come awake." Her face was haggard. She hugged me to her hip and laid her chin on the top of my head. It was as if I was her mother now, holding her safe, and she was my child, happy to lean on my strong, straight back. I closed my eyes, wanting time to stop, wishing the moment would go on forever, the day never begin. But inevitably, Daddy Glenn would get up, or Reese, and Mama would rinse her coffee cup and go put on her uniform. Afternoons after school, Mama insisted Reese and I go over to Aunt Alma's and stay until she came to get us. I'd help Aunt Alma with her garden or her canning, and while we worked, I would make up stories in my head. My cousins loved my stories, especially the ones that featured bloodsuckers who consumed only the freshly butchered bodies of newborn babies, green-faced dwarfs promising untold riches to children who would bring them the hearts of 4 and 40 grown men. Gray told me that I had a very interesting mind for a girl. But Aunt Alma came to the porch one day when I was telling one of the boys' favorites and got so upset she looked like she would piss herself. If she had heard it all, she probably would have beaten me harder than Daddy Glenn. My stories were full of boys and girls gruesomely raped and murdered, babies cooked in pots of boiling beans, vampires and soldiers and long, razor-sharp knives. Witches cut off the heads of children and grown-ups. Gangs of women rode in on motorcycles and set fire to people's houses. The ground opened, and green-black lizard tongues shot up to pull people down. I got to be very popular as a babysitter. Everyone was quiet and well-behaved while I told stories. Their eyes fixed on my face in a way that made me feel like one of my own witches casting a spell. "Girl," Cousin Gray told me, "sometimes your face is just scary."
"Bone's gotten almost mean-hearted," Aunt Alma told Mama. "Something's got to be done."
Mama started taking me with her to the diner. There I could earn my own money washing dishes, money Mama didn't make me save for clothes, but let me spend as I pleased, mostly on second-hand books from racks at the thrift store that I could then trade in at the paperback exchange. Reese complained that I never played with her anymore, that I was always working or reading or sleeping. When school let out for the summer, I found a hiding place in the woods near Aunt Alma's, where I could camp for hours with a bag of Hershey Kisses and a book. The librarian gave me Black Beauty, Robinson Crusoe, and Tom Sawyer. On my own, I found copies of Not as a Stranger, The Naked and the Dead, This Gun for Hire, and Marjorie Morningstar. I climbed up a tree to read the sexy parts over, drank water out of the creek, and only went home at dark. Mama was still worried about me, I could tell.
"Honey, are you all right?"
she asked me one morning. I just shrugged and went back to the paperback copy of The Secret Garden I'd never returned to the school library. She pushed the book down and took it away, making me look at her. Her face was thinner, her skin rougher, and there were shadows under her eyes that never went away. People no longer talked about how beautiful she was, but about how beautiful she had been.
"I want you to do something for me."
She looked down at the book in her hands, at her fingers tracing the cracked spine and tape-wrapped cover. I gritted my teeth, afraid of what she might ask.
"Your Aunt Ruth isn't doing well, you know. She's gotten a lot weaker this summer," Travis says.
That surprised me. I had thought Mama would want to talk about how withdrawn I had become, how I never watched television with them now, or played with Reese, or talked to anybody. Besides, Aunt Ruth had been sick so long, everybody took it for granted. Could she really be that much worse?
"Now that Dee Dee and Butch are gone, Travis worries about Ruth when she's home alone. He asked me if he might not be willing to stay out there for a while, at least until she's better."
Mama opened The Secret Garden to the place where I had slipped my bookmark, a piece of ribbon embossed with the Piggly Wiggly logo.
"What do you think?" she asked.
"I don't know," I said automatically. I hadn't seen Aunt Ruth in a while, not since the day after Christmas, when Mama had taken us over to Aunt Alma's for dinner with all her sisters. Even then, Aunt Ruth had been thin and weak, her fingers blue and swollen where they lay in her lap. What would I do if she got worse while I was with her? What if she were to die?
"Well," Mama closed the book and passed it back to me, "I want you to go out there for a while, at least a week or so, while Travis gets a little time for himself."
I nodded.
"Good."
Mama sighed as if something difficult had been settled. She reached over and pushed my hair back behind my ears.
"Oh, Bone. Why are you always letting your hair hang down and your eyes like that? You've got such a pretty face. If you'd let me give you a permanent, people could see your eyes and your smile."
I grinned at her and shook my head. Her face relaxed a little, and she smiled back at me.
"You are so stubborn."
Her fingers trailed lightly across my brow, smoothing back a few loose strands of hair.
"Even more stubborn than your mama, I think."
Aunt Ruth had changed in ways I had not imagined possible. Her hair, once thick and dark red, was almost all gone. What remained had paled to orange straw that she covered with a green-checked cotton scarf when she went out. She had grown so thin that I probably could have lifted her all by myself, though she would never allow me to try. But the greatest change was in how she moved and talked. She had always been the slow, soft-spoken aunt, the quiet one who thought a lot and said little. Now she talked continuously, moving her fingers in constant little jerking motions and shifting her eyes around all the time, as if she were afraid she might miss something. Bird-like,
She lifted her head and craned to see out the windows while her fingers picked at the afghan she kept across her lap, no matter how hot it was. She lived on the couch now, with occasional forays to her rocker on the porch, and had made Travis take down the curtains so that nothing blocked her view. She watched the sun rise and the sunset and napped whenever she chose, and between naps, she talked. After the first few days of refilling her juice glass and watching her make her slow, careful way to the bathroom, I began to suspect that my main purpose was to provide Aunt Ruth with an audience, someone who would nod at appropriate moments and not interrupt. "When we were kids, we pretty much never saw our daddy," she told me one afternoon. "He was always off working or drinking or traveling somewhere. I got the idea that men weren't expected to hang around much. Now, when Travis is too much with me, he gets on my nerves, even when I'd almost like to have him here to help. It's good I've got you to stay with me, Bone. You don't get on my nerves at all." Aunt Ruth lay back on the couch, hugging her belly with both arms, her eyes narrowing as her cheekbones caught the light pouring in the open door. The bones in her face stood out sharp and high. Propped on the couch with her legs drawn up so that her bare feet were against my thigh, she looked almost like a girl, a witch girl with a narrow gray face. Nobody should be that thin. So thin, the pulse in her throat made the skin over her collarbones vibrate. She shaded her eyes for a moment, looking down the couch at me. "You know, when you close your eyes, you look just like your mama when she was a girl." I nodded. I wasn't paying much attention. Aunt Ruth had been talking a lot about Travis for the 2 weeks I'd been staying with her, about Travis and her daddy, about Uncle Earl and her brothers and sisters, about things that had happened long before I was born, and she imagined no one had told me yet. I should have been glad to hear it all, finally, and to ask all the questions I had saved up for years. But for the first time in my life, I couldn't think about all those old stories. All I could think about was going home. When was Mama going to take me home? Did I want to go home? I bit my lips, took a careful breath before I let what I had been thinking come out of me. Aunt Ruth looked over at me expectantly. "Daddy Glenn hates me." "There." It was said. I drew my knees up and wrapped my arms around them, just waiting for her to say it wasn't so. She was looking directly at me, her face still, calm, open. I knotted my hands into fists. "Tell me, Bone." Her voice was almost a whisper. "You think I'm dying?" My stomach lurched. I looked out the door. Of course she was dying. I looked back at her, and then away again. "Nah, you're just awful damn sick." "Bone." I shook my head. The light coming in the screen door was too bright. Tears began to run down my face. "Bone."
"Auntie, don't ask me."
I looked up. Lord, she was so thin.
"Well, can we talk to each other or not?"
Her voice sounded tired. She closed her eyes and brought one hand up to rub the soft skin at her right temple. It looked slightly bruised, a pale blue shadow on the parchment gray. "I don't know." I took the skin of my forearm between my teeth and sucked at it. I didn't know what to say to her at all. "Well." She was quiet for a moment, then dropped her hand and kind of pushed herself up a little. "I think we can. I think we have to. There's a lot of things I can't do anymore, but hell." She reached out to me, her fingers beckoning. "You slide over here." I hesitated, and then moved down until I could fit my hip between her legs. My back was against one thigh, and I draped my knees over the other. She put her arm around me and pulled me to her breast. "Honey," she whispered, and just held me for a moment. "You're right, girl. Glenn don't like you much. He's jealous, I think." She ran her fingers over my face, flicking away the tears and stroking my cheeks. "There's a way. He's just a little boy himself." wanting more of your mama than you, wanting to be her baby more than her husband. And that ain't so rare, I'll tell you. I looked up at her. Her mouth was drawn into an awkward grin. Men, she said solemnly, are just little boys climbing up on titty whenever they can. Your mama knows it as well as I do. We all do. And Glenn, she was still for a minute, her eyes moving around the room as if she were looking for something. They came back to me. She pulled me tighter. Bone, has Daddy Glenn ever, well, touched you? Her gray cheeks developed matching streaks of pink. Has he ever hurt you? Messed with you? Her hand dropped down, patted between my legs. Down here, honey. Has he ever hurt you down there? I searched Aunt Ruth's face carefully. I knew what she meant. The thing men did to women. I knew what the act was supposed to be. I'd read about it. Heard the joke. What's a South Carolina virgin? That's a 10-year-old can run fast. He hadn't done that. Had he? I felt my tongue pushing against the back of my teeth. Aunt Ruth's cheeks got a brighter pink, almost red. I dropped my head. No, I whispered. I remembered his hand sliding over my body, under my blouse, down my shorts, across my backside, the calluses scratching my skin, his breath fast and hard above me as he pulled me tighter and tighter against him, the sound of his belt pulling through the loops of his pants in the damp stillness of the bathroom. I shuddered. No, I said it louder. He just looks at me hard, grabs me sometimes, shakes me. I hesitated, looking up at her flushed, sunken cheeks. You know, when I'm bad. Tell her, I thought. Tell her all of it. Tell her. But the way he looks at me, the way he twists his hands when he looks at me, it scares me, Auntie. He scares me. Aunt Ruth rocked me against her breast. Oh, honey, she breathed. What we gonna do with you? Afternoons, while Aunt Ruth slept in snatches, I scraped at the old paint on her front porch, keeping an eye on her through the screen door in case she needed me. Uncle Earl had promised to repaint the porch and the front of the house, and said he'd pay for my school clothes in the fall if I would get the wood all clean and scraped down for him. Every few days, he'd stop by at lunchtime to talk quietly with Aunt Ruth and check on my progress. Half the time, Aunt Ruth would be asleep when he came, and he would sit out on the porch with me, smoking Uncle Travis's tobacco and telling me stories while I worked. It seemed to me that Aunt Ruth's illness was making him remember her when she was young and well, when they had all been kids living together out in the country north of Greenville, and when the two of them had first married and started their families, Aunt Ruth with Uncle Travis and Earl with Teresa. He talked like Aunt Ruth did, as if he were continuing a conversation that was going on in his head all the time, musing, reminiscing, talking on and on. Your mama ever tell you about our daddy? He began one afternoon, rolling a cigarette. Man was something, all right. People called him that boatwright boy till the day he died. Took better care of his dogs than his wife or children. Not that Mama needed much taken care of. Your granny is tougher than all her sons put together. She sure never seemed to expect much out of Daddy. Thing is, I think all of us, we're just like him. Your Uncle Beau is a drunk, you know that. But so is your Uncle Neville. And so am I suppose. But ain't none of us as shiftless as our Daddy was. Or is pretty. So we don't get away with it the way he did. It's why Teresa left me. She always said she wanted a man like a long, cool drink of water. Go on about it like women do when they're laying in your arms, all soft and wanting to talk, talking about that crystal spring, that pure essential liquid. He laughed a short, abrupt laugh, though I could see in his eyes no humor, just a gleam that seemed hard and angry. His fingers pressed down, inching the paper tight around the packed tobacco, then drawing the cigarette up so he could lick it closed. Teresa sure could talk, Lord God. He looked off to the side as if remembering things he could not stand to face directly. I dropped my head. I didn't want him to stop talking.
Teresa used to tell me how I filled her up, satisfied her very soul. And every time, I'd think about our daddy. How Mama had to catch a drink of him now and then, so the man never filled her up, never actually eased her thirst. The woman always looked pinched and dry. I didn't want to do that to Teresa. Didn't want to be like that. I wanted to pour over that woman like a river of love. But shitfire. When she left me, she told me I wasn't even a full mouth of spit. Me, her long, cool drink of water. Damn.
Uncle Earl brushed tobacco flakes off his lap.
I just don't understand sometimes, Bone, how things got so messed up. The simplest things. Me and Teresa. Mama and Daddy. Your Mama and Glenn. Hell, even Ruth and Travis. You know, Travis left Ruth once, when their kids were little. Just took off for 2 months and never said a thing. And anybody can see how he loves her. Sometimes, I just don't understand.
He tried to light the cigarette, but it fell apart in his hands. Looking down at the mess of damp tobacco all over his jeans, he swore and pushed himself up off the step.
Sad, ain't it?
He said.
A man who can't even keep a cigarette together? Sad as hell.
He walked away, brushing his jeans as he went. Aunt Ruth wanted to make sure I understood who our people were and what they had done. She devoted 2 whole days to the story of Great Uncle Haslam Boatwright, who had driven a truck over at the J.C. Penney Mill until he shot his wife and her lover on a weekend visit to Atlanta. He'd been locked away in the Georgia State Penitentiary ever since. She told me more about my real daddy and Lyle Parsons, and the whole story of how Daddy Glenn had courted Mama through a solid year of lunches at the diner before she would ever date him. Best of all, she told me how Uncle Beau and Uncle Earl had tried to enlist in the army during the Korean War and had been thrown out of the recruiting office into the muddy street after the sergeant got their arrest records. Drunk and determined, they had made so much noise that the army boys called the county sheriff to lock them up.
Oh, come on, son!
Beau was supposed to have told that sergeant after punching out the deputy and chewing on the ear of some innocent fool who'd made the mistake of trying to help.
You ain't gonna find better soldier material anywhere in the county. Hell, you can see we already know how to fight.
Telling the story, Aunt Ruth snarled and twanged like Uncle Beau did when he'd been drinking, sounding so much like him that I giggled to hear her. Bet they didn't really want to be in no army, I told her. Bet they went down there on a dare or something.
Well, they ain't the type to play soldier, she agreed. But they'd love the chance to shoot strangers, drive trucks, and work on engines. No different, really, from what they do now, except for the uniform.
They loved that story, though. Never seemed to pay no mind to the fact that the army didn't want no trash that has spent so much time in jail and hasn't even finished high school.
They're drunks, I said, and Aunt Ruth just nodded.
Kind of. No different from Travis, I suppose. But you know, they don't think about it. It's like going to jail. They think that a working man just naturally turns up in jail now and then. Just like they believe they got a right to stay drunk from sunset on Friday to dawn on Monday morning.
Beau himself swears that he was fine until he started drinking on weekdays.
She shook her head, pushing her thin hair back with one trembling hand.
You can't tell them nothing.
Beau got his taste for beer as a boy, Aunt Ruth told us one Saturday morning. She was sitting out on her porch while I scraped at the railing and Earl cleaned the gunk out of the works of the old wringer washer she'd decided to sell. He used to go off with Raylene to that roadhouse over at the Greer City Limits after she quit school and he'd just turned 13. They'd earned a little money by sweeping up and cleaning and stocking the coolers full of beer and Coca-Cola. They'd always take themselves a few bottles as a bonus. Never hurt Raylene none, but she didn't have the taste. Liked cola better, matter of fact, and only took beer to sell back to Beau. Boy liked bottle beer better than mother's milk.
and that's most of what he's always drunk. No matter what that wife of his swears. Beer can rot you out, too. Destroy your liver and turn your brains to bleached oatmeal. It's a fact. He didn't need that white liquor they sell over at the franchise. Oh, hell! Earl slapped his palm against the oily metal of the ringer. He never liked to hear anything bad said about his brother Beau. He didn't even like to hear people repeat things he said himself. Beau's got worse stuff than beer in his life. Beer's nothing. Keeps you regular. Beer and pinto beans. If Beau was to stop drinking his beer, he'd probably swell up and explode. His restless black eyes dared Aunt Ruth to contradict him. That wife of his, that Maggie, is the trouble in Beau's life. Little white-faced thing. White eyes. White-headed. Bruises soon as the wind blows hard. Woman makes babies the way you make biscuits. All the time pregnant with some little way-faced, empty-eyed child of God. Hellfire. Beau couldn't get ahead of himself if he gave up everything but black coffee and hard work. 7 children. Bad enough Alma's got so many, but at least she knows how to keep hers fed and clean. That little Maggie can't even change a diaper without coming on a dizzy spell. Woman has eaten Beau alive, like some vampire sucking the juice out of him. You cut that girl open, and you'd find Beau's blood pumping her heart.
Magdalene's not the reason Beau's gonna bleed himself to death, Aunt Ruth snorted. She don't make him drink that poison.
Don't she? Earl slammed the ringer down on the rags he'd spread out to spare the porch boards. Tell the truth, Ruth. Don't you think she's even got a little to do with Beau keeping himself blind drunk all the time?
Aunt Ruth pulled herself around to look Earl right in the face. You making out like you think that's what's wrong with your life, Earl Boatwright? Your woman eat the heart out of you? The mother of your daughters drive you to drink and day jobs and cursing on my porch in the broad daylight? I hugged my knees up close and watched Earl's face. He was always arguing with Aunt Ruth, but it rarely got so mean. I bit my lips and saw him hang his head. When Earl looked up, his face was red and his eyes all shiny.
Yes, Ruth, he whispered. The bitch of it is, I do.
Aunt Ruth harumphed out her nose and then pulled herself out of her rocking chair to stalk over and grab him around the neck. I'm sorry, baby. She looked a little wet-eyed herself.
That was a low thing for me to say, I know. I know how you miss your girls. Know how you ache for what is gone. Don't think I don't hurt for you, baby. Don't think I don't know how you hurt. Oh, Ruth!
Earl tried to jerk away, but Aunt Ruth was holding him too tight. I bit down harder, tasting metallic blood in my mouth, feeling my eyes swell up with hot tears, but almost choking on a crazy need to laugh. Aunt Ruth looked so funny. All spindly and frail, hanging on to her big, tall, red-faced brother so hard she was nearly choking him. But he had always been her baby, like Beau and Alma and Raylene and Mama. Ruth had half-raised them, and still acted more like their mother than Granny ever did. I watched Aunt Ruth's bluish fingers clutch at Earl's arms while he tried to keep his greasy black hands off her yellow chenille robe.
Oh, Ruth!
He groaned and gave it up. He hugged her back, picking her up in his arms.
Don't cry on me. We'll both be sick if you get to crying all over me.
He stumbled across the porch and went down on one knee to put her back in her rocker.
It ain't fair. I ain't never been able to argue with a woman when she starts crying.
I hung on to the porch railing, watching the two of them hug each other tight. Couldn't imagine hugging Reese like that. Telling her how I really felt, crying with her. It made me jealous. Made me wish I was a part of that embrace, that generation. As quick to yell and curse as to cry and make up. Daddy Glenn said I was a cold-hearted bitch. And maybe I was. Maybe I was. The morning Mama drove up in Beau's truck, I was on the porch with 4 little earthenware pots and Aunt Ruth's big bucket of wandering Jew. She'd had the idea the day before that she'd like to hang those pots just under the eaves of the porch, and swore that I could leave half the plant in the bucket
and break up the rest of the red and blue-green tangle into the little pots.
What you think, sister? Aunt Ruth called to Mama. Ain't they gonna look fine up there under the eaves? Stuff so sturdy, it might even grow up over the roof.
Might, Mama agreed, coming up to give me a fast hug.
Grows quick enough anyway. People say it's a weed, but I've always liked it, especially since it don't take any effort to keep it going.
Aunt Ruth patted the seat of the cane-back chair beside her rocker.
Come sit with me. Ain't seen you in weeks.
She leaned forward to look directly into Mama's face as she sat down.
You look different. Almost rested.
What you been doing? Napping a lot? Mama laughed and shook her head.
Just sleeping better since it cooled off a little.
She pointed at the pile of wet moss and clay I was mixing with black dirt.
Everything looks fresher now that the heat's broke. I'd swear, Bone, you've grown a full inch this month.
I just grinned and went on gently separating the tightly meshed roots of the old plant. Aunt Ruth had said some of it would die back, but if I could avoid bruising the fine hairs on the roots, most of it would live. So I had to go slow as I unraveled the long, pale shoots.
Oh, Bone's gonna be a tall thing.
Aunt Ruth took a sip of tea and shook the glass.
You want something to drink, Annie? Bone made me up a fresh pitcher this morning. Got lots of sugar and lemon in it.
Lord, yes. It might have cooled down a bit, but it's still hot enough. I jumped up, slapping my hands against my jeans to loosen the dirt.
But don't put too much ice in it, she called.
She didn't have to say that. I knew how Mama liked her iced tea. I took a lemon and cut 6 paper-thin slices from the middle, dropped them in a glass, and squeezed the rest of the juice over them. 3 cubes of ice on that, then I poured the sweet tea up to the rim of the glass. I sipped it as I carried it to the porch. I heard them before I stepped through the door.
You think it's gonna last?
Aunt Ruth's voice was soft, Mama's reply even softer.
I sure hope. You know what his daddy's like. But Glenn's like a new man since he started this job. He's sure this shows how much his daddy cares about him, hiring him on and giving him his own root.
Doesn't even seem to matter that he's getting less money than the other rootman. Says that's just to prove he ain't getting no special treatment.
Sounds special to me. Sounds nasty. The whole bunch of them make my bones hurt.
Oh, Ruth, I don't know.
I put my head against the screen and waited.
Glenn's had so much trouble. Been through so many jobs. Ain't many people that would take him on at all at this point. And God knows he's trying so hard.
He's out of the house at dawn, don't get home till after sundown. Goes in on weekends to do maintenance on his truck.
He wants to do good. He wants to prove himself. He acts like a different man.
Well, Aunt Ruth sounded less sure of herself than Mama did. He asked about Bone?
There was a pause. I put my teeth on the rim of Mama's glass.
He ain't mentioned her once since she came over here.
Mama's voice had dropped even more. Now it was a whisper.
He's as good as gold with Reese. But it's like he don't even remember Bone. Like she was run off or dead. Somebody we're not supposed to mention at all. I tell you, Ruth, I don't know what to do some days.
Doesn't sound like you have a lot of choice, honey.
Aunt Ruth's voice was kind but firm.
You knew when you went back what the problem was. I can't say whether he's a good or a bad man.
I know you love him.
Like I know I don't much care for him myself, Ruth.
No, listen to me. I ain't gonna tell you to leave him. He's your husband, and it's clear he thinks the sun rises and sets in your smile. I ain't sure whether he's crazy jealous of Bone like Granny thinks, or if it's something else. But he ain't never gonna be easy with her, and she ain't never gonna be safe with him.
He does love her. I know he does.
Mama's whisper was fierce.
Maybe. Still, I look at Glenn, and I can see he ain't never been loved like he needed to be. But the boy's deeper and darker than I can figure out. It's you I worry about. I know the kind of love you got in you. I know how you feel about Glenn.
You'd give your life to save him, and maybe that'll make it come out right, and maybe it won't. That's for God to fix, not me.
Ruth, think about what you said about him. Anybody can see how Glenn got bent, what his daddy's done to him. I ain't never seen a boy wanted his daddy's love so much and had so little of it. All Glenn really needs is to know himself loved, to get out from under his daddy's meanness.
My teeth ached with the cold from the ice in Mama's glass. I knew I should push through the door, let them know I could hear them. But I stood unmoving, listening to Mama.
You never saw him when he used to come down and wait for me to get off work at the diner. That was when I started to love him. When I saw him look at Bone and Reese with his face so open, I could see right into his soul. You could see the kind of man he wanted to be, so plain. It was like looking at a little boy, a desperate, hurt little boy. That's when I knew I loved him.
Oh, Annie.
I pushed the door open with my foot and stepped through. Their heads turned to me, Mama leaning forward on her chair close to Ruth's bent neck. Ruth looking paler and more worn than when I had gone into the kitchen.
Took you long enough?
Aunt Ruth's glance was too intent.
I sliced the lemon the way Mama likes. You can see right through those slices.
My face felt frozen. I gave Mama her glass and went back to the overturned bucket and the broken mass of roots. I tore one half free and dumped it back in the bucket, and then just as roughly started breaking out four equal sections of roots and top growth. As I worked, I kept my face down, my eyes on the plant.
I was telling your Aunt Ruth that Daddy Glenn started a new job over at the Sunshine Dairy. He's real pleased about going to work for his daddy, and it looks like this job is going to work out pretty good.
That's good. I shook dried dirt free from one clump of roots, and then set the mass down in the damp mix in the earthenware pot.
You want me to use that braided cord to hang these up, Aunt Ruth?
Yeah, the brown cord Travis brought home from the dime store. It should hold up pretty good.
I nodded without looking at her.
You get that done, Bone, and we can talk about when you're gonna come home. Reese has been missing you pretty bad.
I thought I was gonna stay till school started again.
I kept my voice neutral, my head still down.
Aunt Ruth can't possibly get along without me. She needs me.
There was a long silence. And then Aunt Ruth cleared her throat.
Bone's right, Annie. I don't know how I'd drag my sorry butt out of bed without Bone to wake me up. She gets up in the morning, singing along to the radio. Sounds just like Kitty Wells sometimes. She might have been starting to laugh, but coughed instead.
I looked up then, carefully, trying to keep my face in the shade. Mama was leaning forward into the sun, her fingers laced together on her knees. Her eyes squinted against the light, but intent on me. Aunt Ruth was leaning back in her rocker, her hand up, almost covering her mouth. Mama pulled her fingers free and dropped her hands down so that her palms cupped her knees.
Well, I can see how you might not be able to stand the loss of that. But maybe I'll just bring Reese out on Saturday. Wouldn't want her to forget what her big sister looks like.
I spooned loose dirt into the little pot, sprinkled water on the dusty leaves. The cutting drooped already, getting ready to lose half its growth. But the stem was moist and flexible under my fingers.
Strong.
It would come back strong. In August, the revival tent went up about half a mile from Aunt Ruth's house on the other side of White Horse Road. Some evenings, while Travis and Ruth sat and talked quietly, I would walk up there on my own to sit outside and listen.
The preacher was a shouter. He'd rave and threaten, and it didn't seem he was ever going to get to the invocation.
I sat in the dark, trying not to think about anything,
especially not about Daddy Glenn or Mama, or how much of an exile I was beginning to feel.
I kept thinking I saw my Uncle Earl and the men who stood near the highway, sharing a bottle in a paper sack.
Black-headed men with blasted, rough-hewn faces.
Was it hatred or sorrow that made them look like that? Their necks so stiff, and their eyes so cold. Did I look like that?
Would I look like that when I grew up?
I remembered Aunt Alma putting her big hands over my ears and turning my face to catch the light, saying,
"Just as well, you smart.
You ain't never gonna be a beauty."
At least I wasn't as ugly as Cousin Mary May, I had told Reese, and been immediately ashamed. Mary May was the most famous ugly woman in Greenville County, with a wide, flat face, a bent nose, tiny eyes, almost no hair, and just 3 teeth left in her mouth. Still, she was good-natured and always volunteered to be the witch in the Salvation Army's Halloween horror house. Her face hadn't made her soul ugly. If I kept worrying about not being a beauty, I'd probably ruin myself. Mama was always saying people could see your soul in your face, could see your hatefulness and lack of charity. With all the hatefulness I was trying to hide, it was a wonder I wasn't uglier than a toad in mud season.
The singing started. I leaned forward on the balls of my feet and hugged my knees, humming.
Revivals are funny. People get pretty enthusiastic, but they sometimes forget just which hymn it is they're singing. I grinned at the sound of mumbled, unintelligible song. Watching the men near the road punch each other lightly and curse in a friendly fashion. You bastard. You son of a bitch.
The preacher said something I didn't understand. There was a moment of silence, and then a pure tenor voice rose up into the night sky. The spit soured in my mouth. They had a real singer in there. A real gospel choir.
Swing low, sweet chariot, coming for to carry me home. Swing low, sweet chariot, coming for to carry me home.
The night seemed to wrap all around me like a blanket. My insides felt as if they had melted, and I could taste the wind in my mouth. The sweet gospel music poured through me in a piercing young boy's voice, and made all my nastiness, all my jealousy and hatred swell in my heart. I remembered Aunt Ruth's fingers fluttering bird-like in front of her face, Uncle Earl's flushed cheeks and lank black hair as they cried together on the porch, Mama's pinched, worried face, and Daddy Glenn's cold, angry eyes. The world was too big for me, the music too strong. I knew I was the most disgusting person on earth. I didn't deserve to live another day. I started hiccuping and crying.
I'm sorry. Jesus, I'm sorry.
How could I live with myself? How could God stand me? Was this why Jesus wouldn't speak to my heart? The music washed over me.
Softly and tenderly, Jesus is calling.
The music was a river trying to wash me clean. I sobbed and dug my heels into the dirt, drunk on grief and that pure, pure voice soaring above the choir. Aunt Alma swore all gospel singers were drunks, but right then, it didn't matter to me. If it was whiskey backstage or tongue-kissing in the dressing room, whatever it took to make that juice was necessary. It was fine. I wiped my eyes and swore out loud, "Get that boy another bottle," I wanted to yell. Find that girl a hard-headed husband. But goddamn, keep them singing that music. Lord, make me drunk on that music. I rocked back and forth, grinding my heels into the red dirt, my fists into my stomach, crooning into the dark night and the reflected glow from the tent. I cried until I was dry, and then I laughed. I put my head back and laughed until my voice was hoarse, and the damp fog came in to cover the lights from the revival. If Aunt Ruth had come out to me then, I would have apologized for everything, for living and not loving her enough to save her from the cancer that was eating her alive. I didn't know. For something, surely, I would have had something to apologize for being young and healthy and sitting there full of music. That was what gospel was meant to do. Make you hate and love yourself at the same time. Make you ashamed and glorified. It worked on me. It absolutely worked on me. Chapter 10. The gospel revival tent had been a revelation, but the sunrise gospel hour became an obsession. Every morning before Aunt Ruth and Uncle Travis were up, I'd go sit close to the radio in their parlor to listen to the sunrise gospel hour. In the stillness of the early dawn, I would lean into the speaker and practice my secret ambition,
cupping my fingers next to my chin and tilting my head back to whisper sing so no one could hear me. I sang quietly along with everything, not just the gospel shows, but the country hits that followed. Marty Robbins, Kitty Wells, Johnny Cash, Ruth Brown, Stonewall Jackson, June Carter, Johnny Horton. I sang so quietly I could barely hear my own voice. But in my imagination, my song soared out strong and beautiful. Aunt Ruth would always smile when she saw me with my head pressed close to the radio. "Turn it up," she'd say. "You ain't the only one likes a little music." Sometimes she'd even start humming along. One weekend, she got Earl to bring his record player over, and we spent 2 days listening to her favorite songs. It turned out Aunt Ruth had a bunch of her own records in a box under her bed, an original Carter Family set, Patsy Montana singing, "I Want to Be a Cowboy Sweetheart," the Clinch Mountain Clan doing Hank Williams's, "Are You Walkin' and A-Talkin' for the Lord," Roy Acuff's Wabash Cannonball, and Roy Acuff singing "The Wreck on the Highway." Her prize was a copy of Al Dexter and the Troopers singing "Pistol Packin' Mama." Every time the chorus came on, she'd pound her hand on the couch and sing along, waving at me to join with her. We'd yell out, "Pistol packin' mama, lay that pistol down," until we drove Uncle Travis out to sit on the bumper of his car with a bottle of Jack Daniels. He came in once to get a hunk of cheese for a meal and stopped in to complain. "You're scaring off the dogs. Give it a break." "Leave us alone, old man." Aunt Ruth's face was pink and happy. "We're full of the spirit." "But you sound terrible," he told us sadly. "You just can't sing." "Oh, hell, Travis, we know." Aunt Ruth looked too pleased with herself to take offense, but I was shocked. I thought we'd been sounding pretty good. "We know, and we don't care. It's just so much fun. Why don't you join us? Come on. Bone, put on that one Earl loaned us. You like Stonewall Jackson, don't you, Travis?" "Oh, no, you ain't gonna get me started. I ain't no singing fool." He backed out the door like he was afraid something was gonna jump on him. I shrugged and put on the Jackson song. If I squeezed my neck down tight, I could almost mimic Stonewall's deep, sad sound. My voice came out rusty and dark as his, like a man singing up from the bottom of a coal mine. Aunt Ruth beamed at my attempt, laughing until she almost strangled.
"Oh, God, Bone, good God, you are something. You are just about more than I can stand."
She fell back weakly, her fingers still keeping time to the music.
"Lord God, you are. Lord God, play it again."
The weekend before school was supposed to start, Mama said I had to move back home and leave Aunt Ruth to the care of her daughter, Dee Dee. Dee Dee had agreed to come home only after Travis promised to make the payments on her prized Chevy sedan, and she delayed her arrival until the night before I was to leave, and showed up irritable and complaining of having to come back at all. She acted like her mama's illness was her personal cross to bear. I was appalled. "She could die any time," I told Dee Dee the next morning. "Don't you ever think about that?" We were out on Aunt Ruth's porch waiting for Mama to come for me, Dee Dee sitting in the rocker while I leaned against the rail. Dee Dee just smirked, lit another of the Chesterfield cigarettes that Aunt Ruth hated, and tossed the dead match back at me. "She ain't gonna die. Not yet, anyway. Not till I'm out of my mind with boredom and ready to kill her myself. You don't know, Bonehead. You don't know how long Mama's been dragging around. I've been picking up after her and my lazy-ass brothers all my life. People always whining at me what a tragedy it is. Mama's so sick and likely to die." "Uh-huh, right," I say. "First it was female trouble, and she couldn't lift nothing. Then it was bad lungs and nobody supposed to smoke in the house. Never could play the radio or make no noise after sunset so she could get her rest. Never no boyfriends could come by and honk to take me out. No new dresses 'cause her medicine cost so much. Nothing but wheezing and whining and telling me what to do." Dee Dee's face was hateful, her eyes flinty and piercing. She reached up and grabbed my forearm, pulling me down close to her. "You don't know what it's like, Bone. Getting out on your own and then being dragged back home. Wait a few years. Get yourself a sweetheart, a job that pays you your own money, stuff you like to do that your mama thinks is silly or sinful. She let go of my arm and kicked the rocker into motion. Hell. Just about everything I like in this world is silly or sinful. Silly, sinful Dee Dee. That's what they call me. Well, damn them. I don't care. I got my car and my own plans, and when that car's paid for, you can bet your ass I'll be gone again. Next time I get out of here, the devil himself ain't gonna be able to drag me back. The hair on the nape of my neck stood up. I didn't know what to say, what to think. Earl had finished painting the porch last weekend, and now the white boards shone in the sun, throwing the noon light up into Dee Dee's dark eyes. I remembered Earl leaning against the porch rail, shaking his head. His voice hoarse and sad as he complained that he just didn't understand how things could get so messed up. The simplest things, I thought. I went down the stairs and squatted on the bottom step, with my fingers templed on my knees as if I were praying. Dee Dee sounded like she hated her mama, wanted her to die. I couldn't understand that. Couldn't stand to think about it. I watched for Mama's car and sang over and over in my head, "Sun's gonna shine, sun's gonna shine, in my back door, someday." Song was prayer, prayer was song. What could I sing that would touch Dee Dee's heart or my own, comfort either one of us? Every afternoon after school, I was supposed to go stay with Reese at Aunt Alma's. But instead, I started going over to the West Greenville Cafe on the Eustis Highway. The jukebox had as many old songs as new. Loretta Lynn, Teresa Brewer, Patsy Cline, and Mama's favorite, Kitty Wells. The truckers loved that music as much as I did. I'd sit out under the cafe windows and hum along with those twangy girl voices, imagining myself crooning those raw and desperate notes. Everybody knew that Opry stars started as gospel singers. All those women singing about their unfaithful men sang first about the certain love of God. Half asleep in the sun, reassured by the familiar smell of frying fat, I'd make promises to God. If only he'd let me be a singer. I knew I'd probably turn to whiskey and rock and roll like they all did. But not for years, I promised. Not for years, Lord. Not till I had glorified his name and bought Mama a yellow Cadillac and a house on Old Henderson Road. More than anything in the world, I decided, I wanted to be one of the little girls in white fringed vests with silver and gold embroidered crosses, the ones who sang on the revival circuit and taped shows for early morning television. I wanted gray-headed ladies to cry when they saw my pink cheeks. I wanted people to moan when they heard the throb in my voice as I sang of the miracle in my life. I wanted a miracle in my life. I wanted to be a gospel singer and be loved by the whole wide world. Jesus, make me a gospel singer, I prayed, while Teresa sang of what might have been God, and then again might have been some black-eyed man. But Jesus must have been busy with Teresa, because my voice went high and shrill every time I got excited, and cracked hoarsely if I tried to croon. The preacher at Bushy Creek Baptist wouldn't even let me stand near the choir to turn pages of the hymnal, and without a voice like Teresa's or June Carter's, I couldn't sing gospel. I could just listen and watch the gray-headed ladies cry. It was an injustice I could not understand or forgive. There had to be a way to stretch my voice, to sing the way I dreamed I could. I prayed and practiced and stubbornly hoped. Driving from Greenville to the Sunshine Lot on Highway 85 past the Sears Roebuck Warehouse, the airbase, the rolling green and red mud hills, a trip we made almost every other week now that Daddy Glenn was working for his father, we would sometimes get to singing like some traveling gospel family. While I was sleeping, somebody touched me. While I was sleeping, oh, somebody touched me. Must have been the hand of the Lord. Full voice, all out, our singing filled the car and shocked the passing traffic. Reese howled and screeched. Mama's voice broke like she too dreamed of Teresa Brewer, and Daddy Glenn made sounds that would have scared cows. None of them cared,
and I tried to pretend I wasn't that bad. I put my head out the window and wailed for all I was worth. The wind filled my mouth, and the roar obscured the fact